Cropod contains language and themes which may not be suitable for anyone, but what is suitable for everybody is the great stuff from our friends at The Famous, iconic wear for bears. Go check out thefamousheadwear.co.uk. Great stuff over there. And if you want to win some stuff from them, scroll down, hit the Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes on this episode that you're listening to right now. We give away stuff from them every single month here on the Cropod. So check them out, thefamousheadwear.co.uk.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Kramer, I've been reviewing your work. Quite frankly, it stinks.
I mean, I'll work harder, nights, weekends, whatever it takes.
No, I don't think that's going to do it. These reports you handed in, it's almost as if you have no business training at all. I don't know what this is supposed to be.
Well, I'm trying to get ahead.
Well, I'm sorry. There's just no way that we could keep you on.
I don't even really work here.
That's what makes this so difficult.
Another episode of the Cropod, the regular Tuesday big show, albeit a little bit later and a little bit less in terms of Canadians and Ayrshiremen. But, I brought one Aberdonian who can at least speak like a normal human being. Hi, Danny.
An Aberdonian Canadian nowadays, Shane. Well, thanks. How are you?
Actually, no, it's like I just combined the show, kind of, except, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, it's all the same. Todd. It's all the same bullshit on a weekly basis. So
doesn't matter. Doesn't matter who's here.
Just a different voice, different accent.
Exactly. Plenty of bullshit to get to. And of course, we are going to get to. Look, we tried very hard to get one of our financial gurus in here, but to no avail. Ross McAdam is flying back from launching a coup in Turkey, I think. Andy McKellar's got his family over, but thankfully he wrote something for us. And everybody else is just a bitch. So
it's funny though, because I was wondering who the special guest was when you put that tweet out before saying anything to me, Shane. I thought you'd landed Bisgrove. So I was quite underwhelmed when I found out there was Ross McAdam. But it is also no surprise at all that actual financial experts are busy. Yes. Versus the other kind that always want to jump on podcasts or Twitter talking absolute shite.
There is a little bit of a dichotomy to that. Yeah. Thankfully, we're here to talk absolute shite about everything. So.
Mm-hmm. At least be honest about it.
No, it's true. Well, look, I've never made any bones about the fact that I'm just here to talk heavy, heavy bullshit. I mean, it's been 11 years of this, folks. Next week. Yeah. 11 years of this. It hasn't changed.
Nothing but consistency.
No, that's the one thing you get with me. Consistent bullshit. It's fucking great. Oh, fuck. I don't know. The football was the football. We went to Livian 1. I don't really know what else to say. I mean, it's kind of like them playing Aberdeen. Like, it was the weekend of we know what the results are going to be going into the international break. So,
yeah. Yeah. There was positives to it. There's not an awful lot to overanalyze because at the end of the day, it's a routine win at Livingston away, which we'll always take. But I mean, Ross McCausland putting on a good show for what's his first appearance or his second, maybe. I can't remember if he started against Hearts at the end of the Seville season, but really positive showing, and it just goes to show what a bit of confidence in a youth player can do.
I wish they never gave him a decent haircut, though.
The bowl cut isn't really doing it for me.
But it was the same thing Nathan Patterson had working until he went to Everton, though. I don't know.
Albeit, you know, I don't think Buff had any good haircuts in his time at Rangers, so I'll take it if he wants to be as good as him. That's fine. But yeah, it does go to show what a bit of confidence in a youth player can do. We'll never get to see what they can do if they don't play first team football.
No.
It's pretty much an entirely different game from when they play at youth level. So, you know, they just need that moment or a good loan spell. And in both cases with youth players over recent years, we've not done enough of either for them. We've found loan spells for them, that's usually been a torrid time for them. And if they get first team action, it's one and done. So it's good to see that maybe Clément is identified, albeit probably out of necessity, that he's a talent worth having around and being involved, and he's taking opportunity with both hands.
Well, I mean, it's good to see, too, you know, the international, despite his goal being chopped off for whatever reason, which VAR, god damn it. Oh, we got to talk about VAR again. I mean, at least his international manager recognized, one, the overall performance, and two, it was obviously a goal, so it doesn't matter. But
yeah.
He got his call up, which is fucking fantastic to see. I mean, this is what you want. You want a young player jumping into the team, performing well, and I mean, obviously representing himself well enough already to earn a call up to O'Neill's Northern Ireland squad
there. Yeah. Well, on Thursday night as well, he came on and looked incredibly bright.
Balls were fucking gorgeous. Yes.
Yeah. There was a bit of a lull in the game for a while. And then, you know, he came on and kind of brought it back to life. But the through balls were excellent, as well as the fact that when he got into a position to shoot, as he did on the weekend as well, he wasn't reluctant to do so. He's been very brave, very confident on the ball. And from what we can gather from Clément so far, that's what he wants from his players. So he's doing everything that's asked of him, which is great. shout out to Cyril Dessers, though, for getting another not very deliberate goal. Man only scores by accident or by deflection, but you know,
apex deflector, right there.
Yeah. However they go in, they all count the same, I guess. But yeah, his performance was again fairly abject.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll grow into confidence and fitness. This is a good time to have an international break, though. Usually you want the games to come thick and fast when we're playing well and scoring goals, but it's a really good opportunity for Clément, because a lot of the players will still be back at Auchinhoe, and maybe he'll get to work a bit closer with them than he has done with the kind of two games a week of late. So
yeah, a little bit more time on the training side before we go into what 18 matches in 12 days or whatever the hell. I mean, it's a very back end of the 2008 season looking fixture this year. See, I love this, you know, because you got Breton over there bitching about we always play away from home the match after Christmas. Oh, look at our fucking fixture list and shut the fuck up. Like, you're complaining about what, having to travel to fucking Motherwell? Isn't that where they're going? I can't remember who the fuck they've got. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
It's two-sided, isn't it? There's good reason to complain about it, of course, but also we have this problem for a good reason, because we've got European football and we've got a cup final coming up. So at least we can look at that, as well as the fact that I don't really think nowadays, certainly last season and this season, the level of Scottish football is so low beneath us that I'm not overly worried about who we play or where we play them. It's just about the load and how that's managed and how fragile the squad is. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, it's going to be a really long 2 weeks just waiting for it to come back, and hoping that it comes back in the same shape that it did or better. So
Well, I mean, it was like, you know, at least Tom Lawrence could put some minutes on the legs, if we can throw that one out. You know, I mean, and honestly, because that's a factor of it right now until January.
Yeah.
You know, again, we'll figure out how much money we're going to have then here later on in the show. But, you know, we need bodies, preferably bodies that can do something with a football every once in a while. You know, so look at, again, Scott Wright is suddenly, you know, a rejuvenated Hamden fucking goal scoring machine. But, you know, I mean, that's just the reality of the squad. It's bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's piss poor. It's below the level it needs to be at. And whatever the hell he can get out of anybody. I mean, so, you know, we got Leon Balogun out here playing. What are critical minutes at this point? Shouldn't have been back in the squad in the first place. Now that he is there, it's nice that, you know, we can rely on him. But it's still, you know, again, an indicator of, well, probably what we're going to spend the second half of the show talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's finding players that can be serviceable at a bare minimum. There's a lot to get into later in the show, certainly with the cost that those barely serviceable players bring to the club and why it's such a restrictive and difficult thing for us to manage the squad, certainly from a transfer window point of view in the upcoming windows. I honestly think we're going to be stuck with these guys for a lot longer than just past January. I'll be surprised if Phil gets what he needs in January, but that's, again, that's part of that discussion.
Yeah.
If Tom Lawrence can contribute 5 to 10 good games between now and the end of the season, I'll be happy. One of his biggest critics, along with several others in the squad that people seem to love very, very much, despite having very little to go on. But, you know, if there's something there that can contribute, then great. It just has to be a contribution that is positive at this point, because there's been too many that are not contributing whatsoever.
No.
So let's see how that goes between now and January. But yeah, it's minutes in the leg, Shane. That's good. That's positive.
Yes,
gotta get minutes. That's about as far as we can go.
Well, VAR's gotten plenty of minutes in the leg since we brought in. And guess what? guess what happened with VAR, folks? Exactly what I said would happen over and over and over again, because it's only as good as the input. And when your officials are shit, you're still gonna get shit results no matter what. And that's I mean, you know, we had the ones in our match. We had the one in the one with Hearts. You go over there as the official and look at that and still come back. Nah, it was fine. Like it's part of the problem with letting the official who was there to make the call in the first place have to overrule themselves. Right. That should easily be eliminated. You have a VAR official for a fucking reason. Right. No official wants to say that they fucked up. Obviously, they don't, or else they get behind the microphone and explain their decisions, but they don't want to do that. And look, in Scotland, I don't blame them for a second, because you're not full-time officials, right? Mm-hmm. If they were full-time and unionized, well, then we could have that fucking conversation, but until that day comes, fuck, you know, whatever. But this will not change, and now we've got the exact same fucking voices in the media who were baying for VAR to come in mid-season and completely change the rules of a competition, which had already started, are now doing the same thing because Brenton feels mildly aggrieved about something that happened in Europe, not even here, and want rid of it in the SPL. Like, that we could be the I don't know, the lodestar for getting rid of VAR in Europe. What? Oh, my God. Yeah. For one thing, you can't get rid of it mid-season again because you already started the competition. We don't need to go through this idea. This isn't a hard concept. You start a competition with an agreed set of rules that you play under, and you finish the competition with those rules. That's it. That's step one. Step two, getting rid of it or having it does not fix the fact that the officials in our leagues are shit. I mean, how many got picked for the Euros? Right, there you go.
Yeah.
That's all you fucking need to know right there.
Anytime somebody like Willie Collum ends up on the European or international stage, you only ever hear complaints about them. They don't represent themselves very well, and a lot of that is probably quite fundamental. It's stuff to do with how our governing body runs the game and how well these referees are trained. I don't necessarily know what goes into it, but it's plainly obvious that it's not an awful lot. We have a very poor standard of refereeing. And, you know, if you want to have technology in the game, I think it's a must personally. I don't really have anything against VAR's existence. I just have an issue with how it's used, how it's implemented, and how it's progressed from here. Because we have terrible referees, and that's one thing. But where's the checks and balances in place? Like you said, Shane, if it's just the same referee reviewing his own decision, is he really going to want to go back on it for a start? Thereafter, could you maybe have, as long as the VAR referees that are sitting watching it in retrospective, as long as they're qualified referees, they should be the one saying, hey, no, you made the wrong mistake. Here's the right one. Now fucking make it.
Yeah.
There should be some level of a check or a balance in place there that makes sure that it's not just one person's decision. I don't know where it goes from there in Scotland, but I just think if you're going to take it out of the game here, it would need to be everywhere, and that's not happening. Technology will progress the game. It has done in other sports. It will continue to do so. It's on the governing bodies of across European, Scottish, European and international football to get it right. So far they're not, but these things take time as well. We just can't have any faith that it will happen in Scotland because we seem so reluctant to change our growth of any kind. VAR's a very tired debate nowadays. The funny thing at the weekend though, Shane, was with the Livy game. Our first penalty is obviously rather questionable.
Yeah.
But then how many decisions thereafter were not so questionable and we were on two or three occasions harmed by it.
Yeah.
The story after the fact was that we got a dodgy penalty in the first instance. Yeah. Never mind all the other details.
We have just as many penalties as they do this year. You know,
it's whatever. Almost like there's not a conspiracy.
No. And it's almost like they get to dictate what goes on in the media. It's fucking
it's
crazy. Well, yeah. What are their more reliable voices? Well. Mm-hmm. I say that in so much as it depends on where you're listening to his fucking face at, right? Because the Chris Sutton that they get in England is very different from the one that we get.
I wonder why.
You know, this week we got the people holding him up as a beacon of everything good and, you know, defending Scotch football against all the naysayers out there, which is great. That's fine. But that's not what Chris Sutton does when he works inside Scotch football. In fact, he is exactly the kind of person that he talked about on the Mail Sport podcast or wherever the fuck it was. I can't even fucking remember. He is the exact kind of person that he was sitting there bitching about. This is all he does.
Yeah.
When if he's working for Sky, you know, calling an old firm or whatever, anything to do with Scotland, he is one of the most denigrating fucking caricatures of himself that you could possibly get. And yet when he goes down south, you know, we get to, oh man, look, he's actually sticking. He's doing what?
Well, he doesn't work for Sky, does he, when he's in Scotland? He works for Celtic.
Oh, yes. Yes.
It's that tenfold because it's all the same tactics. He wants to turn it into a pantomime. You know, he wants to make it into some great big furore about nothing all the time, and it's all about how can we turn this on Rangers. That's his motive. He has no interest in promoting the interests of Scottish football within Scottish football. He is very much in the goldfish bowl when he's up here doing all sorts of good deeds for Celtic and absolutely nobody else. Yeah. Never mind his own ego, which is the obvious incentive for him. But he's a very, very strange guy.
His criminal justice record, you know, asks some questions too that aren't usually answered. It's just, you know, it's so frustrating. You know, like I said, because it's the same people. They're trying to prop up Brendan bitching about VAR right now. It's the same. It's all the same. It's always the same fucking 12 people. You know who's going to do it. And they're coming out.
And I don't think.
You know, again, like he's some paragon of fucking virtue defending Scotch football to these horrible English people. When all we do as a league structure is try to ape what the fuck we force ourselves into a 38-match schedule for no fucking reason. Outside of the four old firm matches, but
yeah,
you know, come on, man. Like, And see, and this is why I hate too, because he's down there, right? For all the shit that you talk about, well, everything up, you know, like you said, because he's working for Celtic. I mean, that's the only thing that matters, and everything else is just a vehicle to get there, you know? But you're working, you could have an honest discussion about what's wrong. The officials are shit. The way our schedule set up is shit. The people running the game are shit. Our TV deal is shit. Everything is a backwater, you know, fucking Band-Aid on a broken arm solution all the time, which is why we're having to sit here now. It would be the most Scotch football thing ever to be the league that punts Barr, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah. While everybody else is trying to advance it, is very much the way that our game goes. It's finding ways to go backwards at every opportunity, whether that be with the TV deal or whether it be with VAR. We constantly scupper ourselves, and having people like that on TV or in the newspapers up here just constantly badmouthing things and constantly finding fault or creating fault in other things is all we seem to be good at. Sutton has spent the last however many years finding a Rangers player to pin up in public and make a demon out of. He did it with Morelos at every turn, and he's now doing it with Cantwell. Yeah. Cantwell certainly doesn't help himself, and we've covered that, but yeah, maybe we could look at those players and say that they're two of the best, that certainly in Morelos's case, some of the best players that we've had in the game in recent years, and perhaps we should, you know, talk them up rather than talk them down. But when you've got vested interest, that's never going to happen. So
no.
That's where we're at with Mr. Sutton.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, too, of course, the ticket allocation kerfuffle, which won't fucking die. And who was it? Wasn't it the fucking shiny bum, Stevie Flynn today, remembered what constituency he's in? And so, of course, had to raise his fucking mouth about this, which, again, I will point out, this is what, seven to ten? It's a Jordan Rossiter time frame from Humza's own deputy coming out and saying that having any kind of Scottish government investigation into historic and systemic child abuse in football would not be productive and would not would not reach any kind of adequate outcome or something. I don't know. However they had to get out of doing it, right?
Yeah.
Which, again, not something that Chris Sutton's going to talk about in England or in Scotland. I think we know why, but again, 7 to 10 days ago, they're releasing this kind of statement about that, and now I would not be shocked for one goddamn second if we didn't have some kind of inquiry or some fucking absolute dipshit moment in Hollywood where somebody got up talking about how the ticket allocation at Hampden is a problem facing society. Never mind, Breakin is still underwater. And people can't, you know, fucking get money to restore their lives and their homes. Now, let's talk about the ticket allocation at a shithole stadium.
Yeah, never mind the corruption that is ongoing in your government at present. Let's find any reason to divert attention away from that.
Yeah.
But,
Meth who? Meth of what? Yeah.
Look, I covered it last week with those from the north, they have such a constant chip on their shoulder about everything to do with Central Scotland. I remember being, whether it be at school or being in a workplace briefly when I worked up there before I moved, thankfully moved down the road. Really, all they ever harp on about is how the west of Scotland gets everything and the north gets nothing. They have an inferiority complex and a level of paranoia that is very much akin to those in the East End of Glasgow. It's a fucking batshit mental area of the world. And it's really not surprising that this is the shit that they come out with. It's the same lot that were complaining about kickoff times at Hampden on weekends. I mean, your team's so shit that it never really gets there, and when it does, you should probably just be grateful for it. But by the way, nobody's going to be hosting a game in your shit tip or in any other shit tip that happens to be anywhere close by Aberdeen. You still have to make the same journey that our fans make all across the bloody country and from beyond. You know, we've got guys coming from Northern Ireland or down in England making, you know, 2, 3, 4 a.m. starts to get down the road. I used to do it coming down from Aberdeen, albeit with the excuse of getting alcohol in beforehand. Really, it's you just do what you have to do for your team. The ticket prices and everything are another argument altogether, and something that should be directed very much at those that run the game. But ticket allocations, hey, if we keep coming back to it, if you want the full allocation in the final, take the full allocation in the semi, and maybe there won't ever be a fucking problem. Nobody will have any complaints. Follow your team when it really matters, not when there's a trophy on the line. We've done it for a decade when we've won absolutely fuck all in that time, pretty much. Relative to that time period, of course, not dismissing the league or the Scottish Cup.
We were getting 44,000 on Tuesday nights against fucking Stranraer.
And we all know, Shane, we all know people that went up and down the length and breadth of the country on a weekly basis, whether it be Annan, whether it be Forfar, whether it be up and Dingwall more recently. People do what they have to do. We travel in numbers. We quite easily have the best away support in the UK, so we're coming from a very... a very selfish standpoint with that. But if you want to pride yourself as some sort of fucking big club that they always have, you know, I always joke that Aberdeen fans always expect to win the league every season, regardless of who they're facing up against. They are truly delusional people. You know, if you really believe that, then support your team the way that you should. And they don't. So fuck off.
Well, again, I mean, it's the thing. You're getting like 150% of your season ticket numbers on your allocation. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. So there. I mean, does that not tell you something right there?
Well, they're always complaining about how Rangers and Celtic have so much more money. Ultimately, it's to do with how well supported we are. Yeah. If you want a better football team in the park, if you really want to compete for trophies and titles, then sell out your season tickets, fill out your ground, turn up to semi-finals and finals. Turn up away from home as well, because we've seen away allocations of Aberdeen supporters even for 3 p.m. kickoffs down at Kilmarnock, and there's about 20 of them there. Back your team, and maybe you'll start having a successful time with things.
Well, see, that's the thing, you know, because it's part of the conspiracy. But it's not, we're not getting like magic money from the fucking league, right? There is no fucking prize money anyway, and the TV money is shit for everybody. We do it because asses are in the seats, and we sell shirts, Do that. That's entirely within your control, you know. And but of course, what's the very first response to Cormac and the him and Burrows having their little wing fest over the allocation? They go, "Oh my god, the tickets are expensive. Can you help us afford them?" Like, oh god damn it, man! Like you don't pay for the tickets in your own ground.
you want
a handout to go to Hampden too.
And I'm pretty sure I said it last week, Shane, the best solution is for them to pay for the clubs, for them to pay for their allocations up front, and maybe then they'll have to shift them. But I guarantee you if they did that, they'd have to give them away.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it.
Well, and again, I mean, you know, we've talked about it before too. It's the lack of financial duty, right? You sit there and bitch about how you don't have enough money to ever compete, and yet what have you done to away allocations specifically for us over the past 6-7 years? Is slashed them to shit. Meanwhile, you still have thousands of empty seats in your ground every time we show up. You know, you cut our allocation and then you don't sell out your grounds. Mm-hmm. So do you want the money? Do you want to be able to compete against the other clubs in Scotland or in Europe? Where guess what you can do if you beat those clubs? You just keep making more money. You know, like the more of them you beat, the more money you make. It's kind of an incentivized thing there. And instead, you willfully handicap your clubs, willfully take money out of your bank accounts, all for what? To do the same thing that everybody else is trying to do in Scottish football all the time. Just get one up us. That's it.
Yep. It's all it ever has been. And it's been, it's been the climate of Scotland for the longest time, but it's been particularly noticeable in the last 10 years, whether that be through football or whether it be through politics and society and how things have been influenced. Scotland is a fucking backwater cesspit, whatever way you look at it. So if you have any aspirations of changing that, then maybe just give up with the whole fucking tirade against Rangers. It'd be refreshing to see if clubs were a little bit more diplomatic about it, but I won't hold my breath. I really won't.
Well, I mean, look, they got a real good chance to put their money where their mouth is too, right? Because aren't they our first match back from the break?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be sold out? Anybody want to take odds?
Well, it most likely will, purely on the basis of somebody saying bad things about them. I'm going to get to that in a minute with Chris Boyd, because it's yet another instance of that guy.
Oh, fuck it. Like, yeah, let's just go with him.
But just to highlight what we're talking about there, Shane, is the only reason they'll turn up in numbers and probably turn up in the pitch against us now is because somebody with that once wore a blue top said a bad thing about them.
Yeah, out the obvious. Again, 7 wins from 70. I was actually shocked that it was 7 yeah. wins from 70. But then you got to think, too, like one of those wins was when they, you know, Celtic laid down so they could finish fucking second out of us, right? I mean,
yeah.
like...
Yeah.
Which just, you're not doing anything to take apart or dismantle this argument when that's one of the ones in the mixer, right?
There. Is it not also what, like 18-0 or 18-1 on aggregate for all games between Aberdeen and Celtic in 2023?
Yeah.
You don't really have a leg to stand on with this argument nowadays, but how about Chris Boyd then? Just shut the fuck up, man. We really don't need people like that at our corner if that's what they're going to say on live TV. He's saying what we're all thinking, which is fine. But, I mean, all you're doing is feeding them with ammo. All you're doing is essentially motivating Barry Robson's team for when we play.
Bulletin board material. That's all.
Yeah, it's what gets posted up on...
Yeah,
it's what I'll get posted up in the dressing room wall, sort of yep. thing. Don't get me wrong, I don't tend to play too much into that kind of stuff. But let's maybe get every advantage that we need. It's really bad timing to bring something up like that. Maybe if we weren't playing them sometimes, then I wouldn't feel the same way. But it's also who it's coming from, because Chris Boyd has. whether he's given our opposition and our rivals any kind of ammunition, or whether he's attacking our own players, I just cannot take to him. He contributed in a Rangers shirt, but he's yet another ex-player without a brain that cannot communicate. Yeah. And whatever alignment he has with the club, I worry about that, because there seems to be a common trend with the people that are aligned with Rangers, ex-players and whatnot. They tend to just not represent us very well. Whereas Chris Sutton has every best interest at heart for Celtic. He's doing exactly what he's been told to do. And it's essentially, whether you like it or not, from our perspective, it's effective. It works. What Chris Boyd has to say about these things is it doesn't do anybody any favours. It just whips other people into the same frenzy. He's essentially doing Chris Sutton's work for him.
Yeah.
He's just pissed off a bunch of people.
I mean, how many years have we said, you know, on this show, go back to the early days of the show, the middle days, or whatever. Like, you know, the reason that the ref pressure thing works is because they do it from top to bottom throughout their entire larger media apparatus, right? Mm-hmm. And then they get everyone else to buy into it too, which is why we've spent how many days with a narrative that we've got like a penalty a match or some fucking ridiculous when we have the same mind as them, you know?
Yep.
But you know, the fact that, look, it took how many days to get to that point? Like, it took that long just for somebody to go at one paper to go look at the goddamn penalty table and be like, oh, shit, no, they both got six, huh? Mm-hmm. And they both missed two. Look at that. Well, maybe we shouldn't have, maybe we could have put this to bed before we spent 5 days whipping it up into a fucking frenzy again. But guess who does it? Chris Sutton and all the other jackbags. You know, you got Tam out there and all the other cocksuckers.
Andy Walker.
The same shit that they're... Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. There's an obvious reason why he's been co-commentating and doing punditry and Scottish football for so long now. The timelines match up very consistently with the events between 2010 and 2012, and Andy Walker being front and centre. And it's just the same after the fact with guys like Tam McManus and Chris Sutton. In a similar vein, how Celtic made Scott Brown the pantomime villain that everybody, including our own support and our players, focused far too much on. When really, yeah. Fuck, where'd I go with that? Honestly, Shane, it's fucking tiresome. It's really tiresome how much attention we have to put on these people. And our own certainly do not help it. I'd much rather that we had all the rivalry on both sides, but everybody had a fucking voice. And preferably people with some level of intelligence that have a voice. That's lacking on both sides, but the influence side of it is completely bereft from a Rangers point of view. We have no real meaningful influence on the media or how the game is governed. I understand our kind of parochial view of shutting the media out and everything, but you do have to have a working relationship with them. Yeah. They are essentially a stakeholder in the club, and as much as I'd rather they all shut the fuck up and leave us alone, it's never going to happen.
No.
All that strategy... country,
it's not going to happen.
Yeah, all that strategy has done is amplify that noise and shut us out from any kind of constructive conversation. It's not about what's said, it's about who's saying it sometimes. Yep. And we just don't have the voices for it. It bleeds into how the game's governed.
No, and Lauder writing a column every once in a while isn't going to fucking shit. You know, I mean, there's no coordinate. No. Again, for them, they've got 10 fucking people working all the time. Whether or not they're working directly for them, they are, right?
Mm-hmm. And they're all in the alignment.
Yeah. No, yeah, straight down, because they get notes from they have a remit on what the fuck to say, and they don't stray from it, which is why you don't end up with shit like fucking Kenny Miller's goddamn column or Barry. Every time Barry, Jesus Christ. See, but that again, too, I mean, it comes back to the, you know, you said with Boyd, we've said repeatedly, footballers are dumb, and we have some of the dumbest ones out there representing supposedly the interests of Rangers in the media. You know,
but there are a few that are semi intelligent. And we just don't seem to want to.
We don't utilize them.
To leverage them. You know, Neil McCann's a perfect example.
Yes.
When Neil McCann was doing punditry on Sky Sports, it felt like Rangers had a voice. It felt like somebody was actually representing us in the best light possible. Kenny Miller, he could be useful. That's the thing. In his kind of recent punditry, his commentary not so much, but the stuff that he's done in the studio, I don't necessarily fault yet. I'm sure he'll go against that. We'll find a way. But he could be useful if we could get him to actually toe a party line, or, you know, sing from the same hymn sheet as Celtic have their ex players doing. We do have people that we could use there. You know, Derek McInnes isn't a complete fucking idiot. He's not the best football manager in the world, and probably can't have too much influence on him at the moment. Although it would be quite fun if we did, because it would have conspiracy theories abound, I'm sure. But you know, there have been and there are ex players out there that could talk very well about us and show us in the best light, and we seem to align with the ones that do it in the worst possible way. It's beyond tiresome at this stage. The club really needs to get a fucking grip of how it handles the media. Because, like we said, we'll repeat it time and time again, we don't really have a choice in the matter. We are the biggest club in the country, and we will always be talked about. So maybe we should have some kind of control over who's saying what. Maybe that's a novel idea, but yeah.
Instead, we're worried about who's covering a fans forum on a fucking Tuesday night. So,
fuck.
Yeah. You know, quick break. Obviously, we've got the accounts again. It's my favorite day of the year. I love waking up and looking at Twitter at 6 o'clock in the morning in Rockford and going, fuck, God damn it.
Yep. I gotta do that. And the AGM announcement.
Yeah. So, all right, quick break. Come back part two. We're going to take a look at all of that kind of shit. And we got questions from you guys, so we're going to do those too. So we'll be right back.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome back to part two of the big Tuesday non-regular Crow Pop. It's still the regular Crow Pop. I don't know. It's the more football edition. It's kind of a strange one for everybody. But, of course, I was. Thanks, everybody. Ordered your Crow scarves. They are still available for order. We just wanted to get a pre-order together for Graham. So, you know, he had a few to do. Obviously, it's a holiday season for him, so he's busy over there. But they got a bunch of – I don't know, he's got some new stuff over there. Of course, go check out thefamousheadwear.co.uk. And as always, we're giving away stuff from them and our friends at blueroomart.co.uk for supporters of the show. All I got to do, look, you like the show already. Again, I'm not, I don't force you into paying for this to come listen to my bullshit. It's all voluntary. So all you got to do, you scroll down, you have to buy me a coffee link or go to support.thecopelandroad.org. You can either, like, you can throw in on a one-off. Or you can sign up for a monthly. If you sign up for monthly things, like from now on, whenever we have stuff like the scarf or whatever, you get it on discount. So I think we're going to do more stuff with Graham, obviously, coming up. And hopefully some more stuff with Blue Room Art there, too. And, like, Danny was just bitching about his sore shoulder there on the bridge chat. So you know where you can go to get that fixed, Danny, is Recovery and Repair Massage Therapy in East Kilbride. You can go see our buddy Mark.
That's really fucking useful while I'm in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. That's fantastic.
Well, you know,
his name again? Mark. Mark.
You know who might be able to help you in Toronto is our good friend William McGill over there. Yeah, I feel like, you know, we got to look. It's next week is 11 years of the Crow Pod, right? Of course, William was there back in the early days helping us out. Somehow, 11 years later, and with supposedly the right people in charge, I feel like we get to have a lot of the same conversations all the time. And this week is no different because obviously, you know, after the fans forum thing, whatever, the press release in live form, you know, which, whatever, we talked enough about that. I don't really give a shit. We, of course, got the announcement of the AGM came out on that day, and that means that the accounts were coming, and they showed up again on a day where I had an earache and just really, really, really didn't want to sit and look through a goddamn PDF for that long, but this is what we do every year, and the results were, well, I mean, we expected, I'm not going to say god awful, terrible in a Mike Ashley era type world, but very mediocre at best, disappointing certainly. Not where any of us expect that we should be. I definitely not where I expect that we should be this point into, you know, this now decade long rebuild. And again, you know, we can discount the 4 years with the Charles Green Ashley fucking conundrum. But, you know, we're 7 years back to the top flight, and this is, we're not any better than we were really back then. I mean, yeah, we might be generating more cash, but as we've talked about repeatedly, explaining where it goes or what it's done or that it's being used effectively at all is something that they cannot do. And certainly not something that, you know, they were held accountable to at the fans forum last week, something that I hope that they'll be held accountable to at the AGM. But, you know, we get this problem. I don't know. There's so little good analysis of it. And I'm not going to look, me and Danny are not the finance guys. Like I said, I wanted to get, I had a couple guys. If I could get Ross Hendry in here to explain it to you, I would. But again, he's lost in a cloud somewhere. So that's out of the question. And hopefully, you know, I don't know. I talked to Andy McKellar. Of course, he did the thing for Stevie Clifford's Four Lads blog over there. Good old Crow guy and good with fucking numbers. It's not good. None of it's good. None of it's good enough. It is not acceptable. It is not where we should be as a club. And it's disappointing. I think that really just kind of sums it up for me.
Well, yeah, it pretty much does. It would have probably looked good in 2016, 2017, 2018, maybe, where we all knew that we had to make certain financial sacrifices to get back to where we needed to be. But for a group, you know, the current custodians of the club that rattle on about the road to self-sustainability, it's not the kind of progress that we need to see. And for those that have actually broken it down a little bit better, it's not really showing us in which areas that we're progressing towards that. It certainly doesn't really highlight the player trading model in a very positive light.
The infamous fourth pillar.
Yeah. However many pillars there are nowadays.
I think we're up to eight. So yes, that's
yeah. I'm sure that'll grow in time, but
yeah
it's. I don't really know what much more to say about it, Shane. It's not a position that we should still be in this day and age.
No,
given the progress that we've made, it really shouldn't, because all it really points towards is, you know, we had the level of revenue that we did the previous year, and yeah, that's probably not sustainable given the fact that we made a European final, we had two record player sales within 6 months. We made the Champions League group stages. Sure, you're not going to get that every year, but it was still a position of strength to build upon, as was 55. And in both occasions, we failed to capitalise. We don't really have that many sellable assets within the squad that would bring us up to the level that we require. We don't have another Calvin Bassey. We don't have another Nathan Patterson yet. Hopefully we do before too long.
Yeah.
But it's a really worrying position to be in, because I said it last week, Shane, the only way forward here, even though I'm somebody that has the ardent belief that we can go out and sign players for 500k, a million, 2.5 million here and there and turn them into £20 million players, because other teams do it, and we've technically done it in the past, or should have done it more in certain instances.
Yeah.
Where we've dug ourselves into such a hole in the past few transfer windows, in the past couple of financial years, that we actually need substantial investment now, and it's not going to be forthcoming. So coming back to what we said as well about the what was announced during the fan forum, how can you sit there and talk about more CapEx spend? You know, it's 13 million over the past year. How can you continue to want to focus on that? And really, it comes down to what I said on Twitter to you as well. Like, it's overcompensating. It's overcompensating for the lack of football knowledge on that board. And that comes with the reluctance to appoint, or at least give a timescale on appointing a technical director that will actually oversee it. And, you know, they could maybe get that appointment right, but if they're not going to give them the resources to succeed, it's still going to end the same way that it has done in recent times, unless they are a miracle worker, which was, you know, has been the case for the past two managers. They're expecting people to work miracles on their behalf because they can't do it. They can't build a successful structure around other people, even if they're qualified or not. They couldn't do it with Beale, they couldn't do it with Gio, they couldn't do it with Wilson. They'll probably fail Clément And we'll all be looking back on this saying, well, same mistakes, another, you know, different year, same mistakes. It's it's quite a worrying position to be in that we cannot find a route to self-sustainability. And we, you know, it doesn't look like it's on the horizon. It doesn't. Well, the revenue is up, great, but where's the strategy here? Where do we go next? Where's the vision for things? Because every turn they come out and announce something or champion something as the next greatest thing, as I'm sure they will with the next technical director, it doesn't follow with any kind of vision, plan, or strategy. It's the same with the announcement around the stadium expansions. Where's the figures in the back end of it? Where's the justification that it's going to be cost effective? There was none of that. It was just here's a big round number. You go look over that way and ignore all the other shit while we trundle along doing the same thing year after year.
Well, I think the accountability factor is one of the things that kills me. And it can't just come from fans. It's got to come from behind. But, you know, I hark back again to the one John Bennett interview, but, you know, he's like, the biggest thing we have to do is be honest and transparent with the fans. And the first thing you come out and do is try to do the most basic fucking spin bullshit that anybody can read through in a set of books that has any kind of financial sense whatsoever. And well, we actually had a 250,000 pound put. No, you didn't. You lost $4.3 million, or 4.1 million pounds. Jesus Christ. Whatever. It might as well be a billion. It doesn't fucking matter. Why do you keep trying to do this shit? Because you're doing it for the same reason that you're announcing a stadium expansion. You do it for the same reason you do all this kind of stuff, because it's to pull wool over the eyes of people who can't read through it or can't be bothered to.
It's what underqualified people do time and time again. You've probably seen it, listeners or yourself, Shane, you've probably seen it in your own line of work at times, excuse me. It's overcompensating for inadequacies. Yeah. It's what those kind of people do. They cut corners. They might talk a good game, but they talk a lot of bullshit. That's just the way that it goes. And that's the people we have running the club. We don't have people that are capable of taking the club onto the next level. We don't have people that are going to progress the club to a self-sustainable model, despite the fact they keep talking about it.
But again, you know, it's like, look, the thing that they've done is either they announced the fans board this week, but you guys have marginalized one of the biggest shareholders in the club, which is comprised entirely of fans, right? Mm-hmm. You marginalize the voice and try to downplay the voice of Club 1872. In fact, have had open straps with them in the fucking media over stuff, fought with them over stuff, called them, you know, in your little WhatsApp groups or on your Discord chats, fucking idiots, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not like this kind of stuff doesn't filter back out and through. It's not like we all don't fucking talk to each other. It's not like, you know, you can't hide this stuff away. So you're going to marginalize, again, one of the biggest investors in the club, which is a fans group, at the same time touting your fans board, which you're going to use to hold up the fact that, well, actually, we do communicate with supporters when, you know, you go off and do the next stupid-ass thing that you do. But then that puts more pressure on, you know, the legacy backers and stuff like that, you know, these institutional investors who either have not, by and large, come out and said, well, much of anything. Or when they do come out and it's the same lip service bullshit that we're getting from the board and the exec comm.
I just want to touch on something there, Shane, that you said, because what the strategy has been with marginalizing one of the significant shareholders, which just so happens to be the fan ownership vehicle. Whatever you think of Club 1872 and how it's run, we can park that to one side for a minute. Completely disregard in this conversation, because you should not be doing that to a major shareholder, first and foremost. It's fucking embarrassing. And what you were saying there, essentially the strategy behind what they were doing with it was plain and obvious to everybody that was paying any kind of attention. You had people, whether it be in fan media, whether it be, you know, notorious individuals that run fan forums or whatever else, or whether it be Stuart Gibson, who said 8 months ago that he was taking the stance that essentially that relationship cannot be salvaged. That's another major shareholder saying this. It's fucking insane. It's unbelievable that somebody would come out and say that in his position. And that is a joined up strategy. That all stems from people, yet again, trying to insulate themselves from criticism. Because when Stuart Gibson said that, he was referring to the statement that Club 1872 put out about James Bisgrove in reference to the friendly in Sydney, the Ange Postecoglou homecoming friendly, shall we state.
Yes.
And essentially palming that off as, oh, well, you know, he had to find whatever commercial revenue that he could. That's his remit, whatever else. We can get into that in a moment. But that was the strategy. It was discredit and smear, essentially, whether it be the body itself or the individuals involved by whatever means, because they have to insulate themselves, because they can't be held accountable, because they don't want to listen to the fans. Contrary to everything that Bennett or Gibson has said in recent times in the past year, you want to improve fan engagement? Well, start with transparency and honesty rather than this disingenuous bullshit. I mean, like, we can get into the Gibson stuff in a moment, Shane, but that really, really fucking irks me.
Let's
because if you want to complain about Club 1872 and how it's operated, particularly if you pay money into it, that's your prerogative. That's fine. 100%. I completely understand. As long as it's a constructive conversation.
You're a stakeholder in that, just like anything. Yeah. Exactly.
As long as it's a constructive conversation, though, because all we've had is negative influences, essentially smearing the organization and saying things that are blatantly false.
Yeah.
Hinting towards mysterious figures in the background controlling it all or whatever else.
Well, you know, and some of it too from people who should fucking know better. Like, we have
exactly
been through this stuff before. Jesus.
People
Christ.
That have been involved in fan politics or fan ownership or any kind of representative body of the support in the past, you know better. Stop this fucking disingenuous bullshit. It's not on. And all it is ultimately harmful. And all you're doing is assisting people that are not good enough at their job to run the club. Essentially a business pushing over £100 million in revenue every year.
Yeah.
Stop it. Just fucking give it a break. It doesn't help anybody. All it does is further marginalise that group and essentially put a fairly significant shareholder into a position where they cannot represent themselves, because the club don't want to have an open conversation, despite the fact that they routinely say so. They don't want to. If they
you want a fans forum, you want a fans board, you want fans. I'm not in Club 18 before anybody starts doing this shit, because I know it'll come up. I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm an individual shareholder. So piss that one off to the side. I don't really give a shit. But as again, this is what 10% roundabout they have. You're doing this. You're marginalizing them, treating them like they're the leftover remnants from like the Easdale block and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, that's not. You can't spout the shit about having fan engagement and the importance of this and transparency with the fans and blah 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 and all this shit. And then still to this day, you don't have anybody on the board. Actually, this is something that we talked about. Coming out, I mean, this is something that they guaranteed us coming out the back of the Green and Ashley era, was that we would have somebody stationed on the board. And instead of doing that, all they've done, well, we're all Rangers supporters, so that's all you need to know. No.
But the thing is as well, Shane, just to go back to that just for a second, with you know, with however they want to marginalize whichever group, it doesn't matter whether it's Club 1872 or not. That was my original point. It really doesn't matter. You can put that to one side. If any of these fan media groups that are so heavily involved with the club came out and openly dissented against any of them involved with the running of the club, they would be marginalized too. I'm not trying to make it out to be some sort of fucking North Korea bullshit, but they don't want to be criticized. They don't. They're incredibly thin-skinned. I'm shocked they even have the self-awareness to realize that they are ill-equipped for their job. It's people that want to hold on to their positions, and in Bisgrove's case, further his career. In Bennett's case, I mean, presumably he takes a great sense of pride in his own investment at the club, and that's fine. But he seems like a very tetchy, very reactive individual. And I don't know what that is. Whatever kind of insecurity these sort of people hold, they just don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear from the support. It's a lot of it in recent years, if you can even remember half of it, it has been very, very akin to Murray era stuff. Sit down, shut the fuck up, pay us money, make sure that you are, quote unquote, the lifeblood of the club in such a way that essentially we keep it on life support.
Yeah.
They don't do enough in the back end to make sure that it progresses. We do our bit, they don't do theirs. It's as simple as that. You want to talk about fan engagement? Sure, let's go. Because the whole fucking situation around pointing a fan board, you know, I've seen some of the names on it. I know one or two vaguely, and I'm happy for them. I think they're really, really good individuals to be involved in that. And it doesn't seem to throw up any of the usual names that shouldn't be involved, which is fine. Yeah. However, you can have the right intentions or certainly dress it up in the right kind of way to make it seem so. But do you really think that they're going to have any kind of influence on anything? Or is this just yet another tactic to front up and act as if you're improving engagement? Because whether people are trying to buy tickets or whatever, we still see consistent issues on a daily basis with how fans interact with the club.
Well, here
it's
we go.
Still here's, a consistent here's, problem.
Here's another pillar, because this is a bit Bisgrove's comments today about the fan advisory. The introduction of the fan advisory, but again, this is not an introduction. We've done this one before, although it's with the Spivs, but we've done this. The introduction of the fan advisory board is a testament to our commitment to meaningful and structured engagement. This is just a fucking word salad. Meaningful and structured engagement with the Rangers support is essential for us to ensure that our supporters' voices are not just heard, but are integral to our decision-making process. Last week, we hosted our second fan forum of the season, and the FAB serves as another crucial pillar to our fan engagement. All right, so we're up to nine.
Oh, my goodness. Honestly, if you cared so much about fan engagement and what the fans think, your previous commercial and marketing director wouldn't have had anything to do with the Aaron's Postecoglou homecoming. I know we keep coming back to that, but it's fucking fundamental. You know,
I mean, the fact he's so grotesquely and consistently misread the core of your fucking business.
Yeah. But this is
the guy here paying lip service to this bullshit today.
Yeah. That's the thing though, Shane. Well, you know, I went back and watched that Gibson interview because it's 8 months since he spoke, which isn't an awful long time ago, but it was quite funny to hear somebody even that recently saying the same shit about Bisgrove or Ross Wilson, whoever, which we can get into. But you know, he was essentially excusing it, saying that, oh, well, like I said earlier, his whole thing is to drive commercial revenue. No, he was also commercial and marketing director. His fucking remit as a custodian of the brand is to actually understand his consumer.
Yeah.
To arrange something like that, to not have any kind of awareness of how the support would react, is fucking baffling. How did you not know? Other than you trying to tick off another fucking KPI and to make yourself look good on your fucking CV and to whoever you jump ship to next.
Please do.
Please do.
Save us the fucking buyout on your goddamn contract, because we got enough of that just, shit going on.
It's all the underlying bullshit again that people maybe don't have kind of full oversight of, which is fully understandable. But you have to read into these things when they're going to do something like a fan advisory board. You have to understand what they are trying to do. Don't just look at what they're doing. Look at the intent behind what they're doing. It just serves as another way to say that they did something. The same way that the SLO and Bisgrove were putting out fan surveys in the past year. How much of that has actually resulted in meaningful change? Go back and look at those surveys and see how much of it has been actionable, how much of it has actually progressed in that time. Because very little, if anything, is the reality of it. It's yet another mode or method of the same way the CEO forum is of trying to front up as if they're doing something to cover their own arses.
Well, and that's the thing too. I mean, it's a shield for when you do stuff. Because you can say we consulted with the fans. You know, and it's just like, you know, setting all this shit aside, too, I mean, just look at the, I mean, just operations of the business. I mean, we spent 21 million pounds on players. Three of the nine have kind of cemented themselves within the team, right?
Yeah.
And again, this all comes back to the fact, one, you wouldn't empty Wilson when you clearly should have 18 months before you finally
several different points.
Yes. Two, you didn't have a strategy in place to replace him, even though you've got all these fucking extensive shortlists sitting there on your laptop all the goddamn time. You tell us about every single time we have a goddamn key management position that we need to fill, and you've always got all these names. Somehow we don't have one for that position yet, and now I'm terrified of the fact that it could be an inside. It sounds like inside hire. It would be the most Rangers.
It'd be the most Rangers thing of all time, wouldn't it? Yeah. But as well, I mean, we spoke about it before with consulting with Sinis, but my thing with that and their idea of trying to get him into a role at Rangers was yet another move to insulate themselves.
Yeah.
Is yet another shield to put in front of people and say, oh, well, you can't criticize us because Sinis said it was good.
Yeah.
Sinis said it was a good idea. In the same way that they thought they could do that with Lampard.
Yep.
They thought they could get a name and a face in and back it up with Sinis's opinion on it, and everything would just fly. I mean, thankfully, we've started to see through some of their bullshit as a support. We're starting to maybe get to grips with this. But really, I mean, nothing should be catastrophized at the moment. You know, we're not in any kind of financial danger at present. Nothing's ever really going to go that way, touch wood, for the long term. We don't have to worry about these things.
Well, right,
but we have to be proactive. We have to see what's ahead of us.
That's what allows people, you know, certain people who like to get out here and spout themselves as fucking geniuses about this shit to say, well, remember what happened in 2012. This isn't the fucking same thing. And if you want to sit there and compare it, then you're part of the fucking problem.
No.
Right? Because these are supposedly people that you hold up as having the best interests of our club at heart. They don't. Yeah. They have the best interest of preserving their position within the club at heart right now.
If they gave one goddamn,
we'd have a real director of football. You would have gone through real management recruitment processes. Mm-hmm. You would have the best people available in positions for this club to succeed. We have the same cost base as them, and we are miles behind them
right now.
And that's fucking disgusting.
If the best interests of the club at heart were perhaps, you know, working closely with the support in a really meaningful way and, you know, operating the business in such a way that the football operation side of the business is fully functional, fully sustainable, and entirely competitive on both domestic and European fronts.
Yeah.
Because we need both to actually be there, then, hey, yeah, they would have the best interest of the club at the heart. But none of that is forthcoming.
No.
So what are you trying to justify?
Well, and I want to take two, because the Champions League thing is another fucking shield, because, well, that money's not guaranteed. It is if you win the fucking league, it's guaranteed. Mm-hmm. It is. And what is the bare minimum of expectation of this club every single goddamn time we kick a football? That we win the league, right? Sometimes it doesn't happen, but that is the expectation. And we're not near that. The only reason that we are in with any kind of shout at all right now is how much they fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Again,
so, Shane, see with the Champions League though, can we not just point to a very obvious example that's been right in front of our noses the past 2 years? Who have we played in the qualifiers?
Yeah,
even after finishing second, right? We played PSV, and our wage bill is higher than theirs, is it not?
Yep. Yeah.
So
see, but again, hold on. I want to point out too this: a lot of the same people that were sitting out there saying, "Well, we can't really expect to compete with PSV given the financial gulf." There isn't a financial gulf.
No, right? There isn't.
Again, you want to shill that stuff for them, for Bisgrove, for Bennett, for all of them. You want to just come out and shill that stuff without actually, and instead of now today, put your fucking hands up and say, "Hey, I was wrong. I listened to their bullshit. They're full of shit. We have the same kind of fucking structure that PSV does. We have that kind of fucking wage structure. There's no goddamn excuse for it. Don't let them sell you excuses, and then don't turn around and sell them to fucking fans."
Yeah. I mean, look, there was what, 10 million, there was what, £10 million of bonuses paid out because of the Champions League qualification last year, which, by the way, I don't mind. I think that we should hire managers and we should recruit players on the basis that, hey, we can't pay you as much as other clubs in Europe might be able to, but if you make the Champions League, you will get a hefty bonus. If you win the league, if you win a cup or two, you do get a bonus. You do have incentives to succeed. Because ultimately, that's what we need, is a football club that wants to be successful, that wants to consistently win trophies. We have to incentivize people to do that. And when you apply that to the executive level of the businesses, what is the incentive other than personal gain? What is the incentive for James Bisgrove to actually progress the business? Never mind the fact that he's not actually qualified for that position, which, by the way, is another point of justification that these people use. They say that, oh, well, you know, he did a good job as a commercial marketing director. Yeah, fine, he did an acceptable level of job for the position that we were in. That's fine, not taking anything away from that. But, you know, if we were fucking Blackburn Rovers or whoever, Bristol City in the English Championship, If they appoint the director of commercial marketing as CEO, nobody would bat an eyelid because they're so fucking small time that who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Rangers Football Club should have a much higher standard than that. And never mind the fact that we didn't go through the correct recruitment processes, but Jesus fucking Christ, have some ambition. Like, go out and appoint a guy that might cost us 300, 400, 500K a year, and maybe we won't be having these issues with how we fucking balance the accounts at the end of the year. Just a thought. If we have somebody that can actually create a vision and a strategy for the club and, you know, implements their own fucking blueprint on things and make sure that things actually go in the direction we need it to, we don't have to have these conversations. So stop propping up people that are blatantly ill-equipped to do so, never mind some of them in being involved that continue to refuse to do so, even though they've been taught lessons, whether it be from Stuart Robertson's era or not. You know, we've fucking seen it all. Yeah. We're at a point now, 7 years later after promotion, where we're still having the same conversations.
Yeah. Well, it's, and again, too, I hate, look, don't come out here and patronize the fans saying, don't forget 2012. Tell them that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't hold that to fans. That's their fucking job. They're in that job. They get put in that job to execute for the best interest of the club, to grow the club, yeah, to do things, to keep Rangers where it's supposed to be. And we're not there. And I can't say it enough. The only outcome is them getting the 56 before us and them overtaking the trophy haul. That's it.
And who would have thought that post-2012 that we would ever be in risk of that, Shane? I think I alluded to it last week when we all went through the events of 2012, but I remember exactly how I felt when the day we went into administration. Yeah. I remember how we felt when we were going through the CVA process and when Charles Green took over the club. I remember standing in fucking supporters clubs and pubs late at night after working a full shift at work during the day during 2015, collecting share proxies, trying to get Mike Ashley out.
Yep.
I remember doing all this shit. I remember exactly how I felt. I remember feeling as if the club has a second lease on life. It's going to be a fucking difficult and turbulent time, sure. But now we're past all that. We're past that time. We're out of the other side of the tunnel at this point. And I don't see anything towards what I would have as a vision for the club for the future.
Well, that's the thing.
We should have came out of that.
Stability is not success at Rangers.
No,
stability is not success, right?
We should have came out of that with hindsight of all the events in the Murray era and all the events through that time period, the aforementioned time period. Just wanting the club to adapt to the modern era, because it was around about the same time that modern football was shifting very rapidly.
Yeah.
But to be the most efficient and most successful version of Rangers there ever has been. And it's been 10 plus years of just fucking abject failure all around.
And I hate to, you know, look, here's, right, Cyril Dessers is bad. Sam Lammers is bad. They're going to be held accountable, right? They won't play as much, hopefully. And eventually we ship them out of the club. But the people who made those decisions have to be held accountable for those decisions being made. It's no different than a bad football player being removed from the club. Because if you keep a bad football player around, they keep doing bad football things, and the football is bad. Well, if you keep bad people in the background making the decisions for the football club there, guess what keeps happening? They keep making bad decisions for the football club, and more bad things happen. And at some point, it just spirals out of control, and you can't catch back up to it. And I will say it one more time. They will get to 56 before us, and they will overtake us in the trophy hall. That is the outcome to us persisting with this just because we're afraid to fucking make a change.
Yeah, without that meaningful change, that's the way that it goes. We have the opportunity while they're in turmoil at the moment.
Again!
to actually do something. We've had those opportunities, as I said earlier. We had the opportunity post-Seville. We had the opportunity post-55 to capitalise on a position of strength. We routinely do not. But like you said, we need to hold these people accountable. These are highly paid executives that essentially get paid out of our pocket, first and foremost. But we've seen in AGMs in years gone by, and we've seen with fan media, and we've seen with whoever people of influence in the Rangers support in recent years continue to justify these things instead of asking difficult questions. So we've got an upcoming AGM, and what questions are going to be asked? Are we going to be discussing my jers or the fucking how shit the pies are in the concourses at Ibrox? Are we actually going to have a conversation about what is wrong with the club? Because we might be in a position where there's no immediate financial threat to the club, but there's still an awful lot wrong. There's still an awful lot to address, and there's still an awful lot to change to avoid that nightmare scenario that you've alluded to, Shane. You know, the kind of questions we should be asking is not just when is the technical director going to be appointed, or how are you going to achieve the stadium expansion? The question should be, how are you going to support a new technical director, and therefore support what should be, hopefully, a very successful manager in Philippe Clement?
Yep.
These people need the structure around them to succeed. And if you're going to ask questions about the stadium expansion, ask how you're going to fund it, and ask thereafter how that is going to affect the football operation of the business, the main and most important operation of the business. We need to ask tougher questions, and we need to get better answers and see things progress in the right way. Because see, if you get bullshit answers 6 months from now, you can reference it and say they didn't fucking do it. And that's what that's effectively what we are doing now, Shane. But
yeah,
the support as a whole needs to move in that direction very quickly. Otherwise, there is an inevitability about what you stated.
Well, speaking of good questions, since you're here on Tuesday, you get to do this bit now. So Neil Buchanan wants to know here, who hit it better, in Michael Matheson's iPad SIM denial or Rangers board bonuses? That was the most immediate, please don't look at my browsing history. I will give you the other 10 grand. Just don't, please don't look. Don't look.
All that question makes me think is, what kind of bullshit have the executives at Rangers tried to expense in the past?
Also, I want to see their browsing history. Yeah. I'm not suggesting any Matheson type stuff, but I mean, I would Shane, like to see like what dumbass ideas that they're possibly
Shane,
looking at.
Shane. Thing with that is, if you could ever get any kind of oversight of anything like that, not even us as a support, but the people that run the club, if they were ever to have any oversight of that, that would actually result in some level of accountability, wouldn't it? I would not be allowed
around here.
I'd be looking at fucking browsing history. Why would you do that?
Rab, go pull it. I know you can.
Oh my goodness. I hope that answers that question.
Let's see. Lewis wants to know, what was more surprising? Celtic conceding 6 goals away from home in Europe, or the Aberdeen conceding 6 goals away at the Chamber of Secrets? That's kind of a push, I think.
I think they're fairly equal.
Yeah.
And not surprising at all.
No.
I mean, that was quite the experience watching. Watching them in the Champions League stumble around against elite opposition and then coming back to Scotland and just rinsing the fuck out of one of our worst teams in the league at the moment. It really puts things in perspective.
You had some of those usual supposedly neutral like SPFL accounts being like, well, how can they expect to compete against clubs? And then like they posted like 3 or 4 screenshots, all of which 60% of them were teams that we've beat in Europe over the past 3 or 4 seasons. Some of them quite handily. But yeah, how could they possibly expect to compete with this? Clearly, it's VAR, it's not VAR, right?
It's that, but I mean, it comes back to what we were saying about the smaller clubs in Scotland and how they are run. Aberdeen surprisingly didn't get an absolute tanking in the group, albeit they didn't come anywhere near qualifying. But Typically, these teams get absolutely horsed in Europe as well against fairly average teams. So it'll just be up to us, Shane, to represent Scotland and Scottish football.
Just drag the and fishing all the way through, take and not get nothing for it. Absolutely no credit for winning the league and going to the Champions League. So, man. Grant wants to know what event would you have a reasonable expectation of being let in, despite neither being invited to or purchasing tickets for said event?
I have. I've seen this question. I have the perfect answer for it for me personally. Any kind of RNIB related convention. Just for everybody listening, I am partially sighted. I can watch our games and actually analyze them to some extent. But yeah, I have visited RNIB before. I'm sure they'd let me in again.
Well, yeah, but you gotta be able to find the door, right? Isn't that the
yeah? That's the challenging part. If I could get there. Somebody could guide me there. Yeah,
I don't know. I used to go to Wrigley often. You know, like not like pre 2015-16 when the Cubs got hot again. Because people always have this idea of Wrigley that like it's always sold out. No, it's not. It's like any other fucking team. If they're not good, nobody's there. You know.
Yeah.
So I used to just turn up and go to like see the same two or three guys in the corner turnstiles I know and be like, man, I got to go ahead. Like, or you know, give them like an eighth of weed or something. Like, they don't give a fuck. They're going to let you in. It happens.
America.
Grandma's though, when did the Green Brigade become a political party? Well, I think it was when they filed their papers to be a separate entity, right? Even though they have the same address.
Yeah. They've been spawned out of Celtic's own doing, though, haven't they? Really,
yeah.
as much as they're trying to marginalize them nowadays.
You created this thing.
it's another beast that they created. They just spawn nothing but fucking terror and evil. That's just what they do as an organization. But yeah, if you've got a group of supporters that just simply want to further the interests of terrorists across the world, then yeah, they've been politicized, if not radicalized. That's also
it is again still crazy though that of course the first minister of his made up government there would spend that much time trying to launch inquiries into made up TikTok videos, yet somehow has nothing to say about any of this, which is actually happening like on televisions right in front of him. It's amazing.
I wonder why. It must have absolutely nothing to do with his in-laws. Nothing at all.
No. Credit to Brendan for covering up the poppy with the collar of his jacket there. That was a good move. But I mean, even he couldn't hide the look of mild disgust on his face.
it's funny how their vitriol, you know, and their kind of stance on things can change at such a drop of a hat. When Ange was wearing a poppy in plain sight, they had absolutely nothing to say about it, did they?
No.
Because they were happy that they had him.
Yep.
The political nonsense that gets involved in their, well, in football in general, but specifically with them, is quite the sight to behold.
Well, I think I summed up perfectly at the weekend. They don't know why they do these things, and you could fit their ideas on culture and society on the back of a fucking matchbook. Their collective ideas. I mean, they genuinely just some of the most brain-dead, window-licking fucking God. Speaking of, Colin wants to know, why is Chris Sutton employed by Sky Sports? Is it for his tactical intelligence, or is he just a doorknob licker? I think we kind of covered why.
Yeah, the latter is definitely true, though. I don't really want to know what Chris Sutton does with his doorknobs, but I suspect that it's nothing healthy or productive.
Throws them at youth officials? I don't know. Do you know?
We pretty much covered that one.
Yeah, I've never...
Sutton is Chris Sutton.
You know, it does befuddle me sometimes that people like him... Right, you can go back and watch him as a player get intentionally set off in a match, right? Why would you hire someone like that to be an expert?
But I would love to know what processes they go through to actually
assess the people that they have on their shows, whether it be you know, in the past with BT or now with Sky, or even with BBC in particular is a great example. What are you assessing these people on? What qualities do they bring, or do they just ring up themselves and ask to come on like it's a fucking
see podcast? That's a, well, because you don't see Del Pieros or Zidane's or shit like that going you know, advocating for these kinds of positions, like, or the people that do you know, like Michael Richards has done a good enough job, but like he went back to school and got some kind of education on how to be a broadcaster, you know, like there's something to it. He thought that this was the next phase of his career and spent time doing it, as opposed to, as Colin pointed out, doorknob lickers like Chris Sutton.
Well, if you turn up and have a positive view of Celtic, that seems to be enough to qualify you.
No, you can get a pay packet off of that for sure. I mean, that's no although
what's
right
quite
there.
Funny one that I just thought of, do you not remember when Petrov was in doing punditry, and he was actually very fair and balanced, and he suddenly
that didn't
disappeared.
Last too fucking long.
Why is that, I wonder? When he was you know, not saying bad things about Rangers, I wonder why. He's not a fucking brainwashed idiot. It is remarkable the lengths that they go to brainwash themselves and others that come into their sphere.
You can get people like Alan Burrows to go along with any old bullshit, like, you know. God,
yeah,
it's,
I mean, I think you can manipulate that guy into doing anything that you wanted to be honest.
Allegedly.
Yeah. Allegedly. Well, he's up in the northeast now, goodness knows what he's doing with livestock.
Allegedly. You know, speaking of Onion headline, a wrecked dog loving all the attention. That's what we've got for today. That no correlation to what we were just talking about right there at all.
No. yeah. I don't think that could be applied to any of the names that we've mentioned.
Oh man!
Oh my goodness!
Oh, see, Dan, look, you made it almost a whole hour and a half. We got through the show, so
yeah. And I still have so much more to mention as well.
I know. Well, that's fine, because we'll come back. We'll come back on Friday and do. I don't know. Look, yeah. We got international break. We got fill time, fucking somehow. So, speaking of which, I'm coming back with our old buddy Colin. We're gonna do some more Crowpot Explains America. Again, no matter what the topic is, the answer is racism. Just always. Always keep that in mind. Whatever the explanation is, racism is what it's going to be. So, but we are getting those shows put together. Of course, me and David are going to start our post-war series. Again, if you have an idea, please reach out. It has to be from the end of the war in 1945 to November 22nd, 1963. So you got an 18-year window in there. And that should be pretty easy to remember, given that it's, you know, the anniversary is next fucking Wednesday, right? So that kind of simple one. Just keep that one in mind. If you got something you want me and David to do, we're going to do it. Me and Todd are back tomorrow, Wednesday, for I don't know what the hell we're going to do. I mean, I'm sure Todd's got a bunch of stories about Italy that are going to piss me off. So... You know, it's just not fair because I hate flying. So fucking, I don't think people have ever understood that with me. I think like some of you guys finally get it. The ones I talk to more than the people I even talk to, I genuinely dislike flying to the point where it's very hard for me to do. And I have to get really, really, really drunk to do it, which they tend to frown upon.
Nobody wants a drunk American on their plane.
No,
that's usually a sign,
especially me.
Very
Jesus
bad.
Christ.
No, I don't particularly like flying, but you know, I've had to do quite a bit of it recently. And it never ends well. It just doesn't. Was recently stuck in Poland for an extra 3 days thanks to the air traffic control situation in the UK. And when you fly Ryanair, everything will go bad, even when it's not supposed to. So yeah,
that's like a Legion or fucking now what the hell is the real bad one we have? I can't even think of them all.
Spirit?
We have so many Spirit. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Spirit's like I forget the comic. He's like, it's like when you're flying Spirit and the pilot walks by you to take a piss. You're like. fuck?
Oh God, yeah. God love Ryanair, but I'm still waiting on the 300 odd quid that they promised to pay me back. So.
Well, you'll get it sometime, and I don't know. 2026 ish, maybe.
It's about
when Bizgrove will be out of a job. So that'll do it. Danny, don't find him on Twitter at DJ_1872. Please don't find him again. It's not a bit.
No.
He has nothing good to say ever about anything, which is why I keep inviting him back on here. So Danny, thanks again, brother.
Yeah, exactly. This is just that in audio form. It's just me spouting and spewing absolute bullshit. But at least I'm honest about it.
Yeah. I'm not an expert.
Not an expert.
Have I ever? I've been doing this for 11 years. You guys have gotten the same exact shit out of me now that you got back then. So it's never changed. It's constant. It's the same. But look, I am the reliable aspect of the Rangers fan media. It's just that's it. Everybody else ebbs and flows. Shane still a dick. So, like I said, back with Todd tomorrow. We'll do more then. We'll talk to y'all soon. Bye.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah.
You can't be fucking serious at that.